Are you confused about digital audio broadcasting? If you're like most people, you probably are getting a headache from all the information overload that you receive via documents, emails, maybe even an email list, where they discuss the pitfalls and pros of digital audio broadcasting on the medium wave band. It's really hard to put into the written word what is happening and what the effects are. So we're taking it again to the audio form in a conversation that we're going to have with Leonard Kahn. Leonard Kahn is a pioneer in the broadcasting business. He's also an expert on the medium wave band and how transmitters and transmission systems work. Sit back and let's talk to Leonard Kahn about digital audio broadcasting. Help us understand, why does digital AM cause interference to analog radios?
That's an interesting question, and it's basic to the system. They need space to put in the digital signal, and the digital signal is surprisingly, to some people, a digital signal is very heavy user of the spectrum. When you sample, you have to sample at least twice the highest audio component in the signal. That's basic. So you start with a problem, and what they are doing is trying to fit this into a narrow band that's possible on the AM band, and it just doesn't fit. You know, a lot of people are thinking that there's ways of improving this, but at this point, digital broadcasting is a rather mature field. There's been a decade of heavy work on this, and then you can go way back to the start of digital. But the attempt to make up for signal to noise and to get a decent bandwidth signal in a narrow band with digital is just the wrong way. It's a very wide band technique.
So there really is no way for that digital AM interference to be reduced while still maintaining a digital coverage area that's identical to the analog.
Yes, it's not even able to do the analog coverage. And they, I think they pretty well admit to this, that they want to get close to the present coverage during the day. Nighttime, of course, they can't do the situation. You know, I look at the spectrum photographs, and I think this is rather important. If you take a look what's been published, you will see mainly from WOR, and we've confirmed them, by the way. We put spectrum analyzers on them at Long Island, and they show it correctly. Those spectrum photographs that have been bandied around are correct, but what they mean is much more than meets the eye, not to make a pun, but you're looking at a wave, and you've got to look at the settings of the spectrum analyzer that they use, and what they've done, they use a resolution bandwidth of 1 kilohertz. They also use a video bandwidth filter of 1 kilohertz. And that is very, very important, because if you take a look, as we have, we set up a regular AM wave, fully modulated, double sideband conventional AM wave. And if you look at the spectrum with these filters in place and this resolution in place, you do not see any modulation. It just tickles what you see is the carrier, which has its buildup and fall off due to the resolution. And you see that it's very hard to see any modulation at all with 100% modulation of amplitude modulation because it's hidden. And you'll notice on these WOR spectrum pictures, you don't see any modulation of the carrier. This is supposedly and is correctly taken during actual programming.
Well, wouldn't that make the spectral density different from AM so that basically the NRSC mask is irrelevant then?
Absolutely. It's totally irrelevant. Actually, you're seeing a series of carriers. The NRSC mask didn't say you could put a bunch of carriers from 10 to 15 kilohertz. That's ludicrous. These are carriers. What you were supposed, the way that mask, and I was totally opposed to it because it was just a way to satisfy a problem that one of the stereo systems had bad spectrum. So instead of insisting that they make the rules, they changed the rules. And the rules, but they changed it with a rule that was somewhat reasonable, and that is that within a 10-minute period, you were not permitted to hit more than 25 dB at those frequencies. Now, that means one spit, one overmodulation hit every 10 minutes that came to that point. The energy is like an impulse function. There's very, very little energy there. But if you look at this, this is here all the time. It's like it's orders of magnitude more energy. What is important in all this is the energy, not a short-term pulse. They are putting carriers there, and that energy, it's like your electric bill. It's kilowatt hours. You have to integrate the time into this, and the time is totally, in other words, is totally violates the mask. It's not even close to the mask or by orders of magnitude.
You know, a 50 kilowatt AM station broadcasting analog audio has quite a reach in terms of distance from the antenna to someone who can receive that signal. It was stated by one of the engineers supporting digital AM that he observed that the digital AM signal is only usable in a 40 to 60 mile range. Is this a problem or a danger?
Yeah, it's a two-way danger. First of all, they don't serve the public. These major clear channel stations offer a wonderful service to the public. I mean, anybody drives knows that, and people in Midwest and Far West, where they're sparsely, there are not that many stations there, they depend upon it. By the way, I read your filing with the commission, and you demonstrated very clearly you're listening to WOWO. When you get out there, you've got a few major stations to listen to, and you want to hear them thousands of miles. KRVN in Lexington, Nebraska is heard regularly. Now, I don't mean skywave good conditions or anything. Every night by truckers in Texas, all over Texas. They program, they sell that time to Trucker Networks operation. So that's a vital service. But the other side of this coin is the interference that a digital station of 50 kW will produce will cover all over the country, too. It won't be usable, but it will create the interference. A kilowatt can create an awful lot of interference due to skywave. So can you imagine a 50 kW with all these carriers? These are not just sideband modulation. These are actual carriers, and they're absolutely necessary. And so they can't do the job, but they can create the interference. We have a lose-lose situation.
Well, that brings up a question. Now, during those tests between WLW and WOR last year, a member of the National Radio Club who lives in Arizona noted that, and I quote him here, "While I could barely hear the analog signals of WLW, the hiss of digital AM was quite pronounced and affected the receptions of 710 and 790, or 690. What makes iBox so potent?"
Well, just what we said. You're producing a bunch of carriers that, and by the way, the peaks of these carriers, they modulate upwards. These are just, which you will not see on the peaks of them, because the spectrum analyzer is set that way. But I have a worse story to relate. It's secondhand, but the engineer that told me this is one of the most capable engineers I know in the broadcasting field, and he's straight as an arrow. I mean, he doesn't overstate anything. Told me that in Pennsylvania, he can hear WOR like almost a local. He listens to it all the time. They put a good, solid signal there. When they went on nighttime, they did do, and I didn't hear the nighttime. I'm sorry I missed that. You know, WOR quits at sundown. By the way, in the rules, it says stay on till 6 p.m. They turn it off before 6 p.m. I don't know. Well, I do know the problem. It's this, that when they did test WLW and 700 in Cincinnati and WOR New York 710 tested into the evening, this gentleman happened to listen, and he couldn't hear WOR, and he couldn't hear WLW. Now, WOR he hears, listens to routinely. It's no problem. WLW he hears, they fade, but they're there. It was just two sheets of noise, solid on both channels. You couldn't detect the audio below it. In other words, you didn't know there was voice there. It's a very effective jam.
AHL Ducks in the Gardens tonight against Norfolk. It's Corey Pecker night. Need I say more? Scott Springer, 700. WLW 2020 Sports.
Hey, you've got a pair of passes good for daily morning tours of the riverboat to Tall Stacks 2003 this October. If
how do you see the digital AM system handling the delay spread in the fading of nighttime AM signals, especially with some multipath and skywave fade?
No, it's not possible. You know, again, this is very mature technology at this time. The proponents of the digital transmission have got excellent engineers on this. It's not, they're not routiners. These are good people. And they are fully aware of every last ounce of coding, processing, all of the tricks that you use in digital technology to approach capability. Where you're using advanced coding systems that get you within 2-3 dB of the ideal, the mathematical ideal. All of this effort, you still can't do it, because what you're doing, you just don't have enough bandwidth. And what is very interesting and important, people are saying, well, this is going to give us good quality sound. I challenge that, because it's not only they do 36 kilobytes per second. That isn't the greatest, as you well know, but that's not the problem. The problem is they do a compression, according to their own publications, of 70 to 1. In other words, one portion of that signal is out of 70 is what they use. There isn't that much anywhere near that kind of redundancy in speech and music. Nowhere. So you can't cut it up like that and expect to get good quality sound. Whereas AM, I know, and you know, of situations where you cannot tell the difference between the output of the receiver on AM and the input. We have run tests that. We've challenged people on that. And I'm not the only one to do this, that will take a stereo signal with a good receiver, not a strange receiver, but a good receiver, and end up where you can't tell the difference between the source material and the output. And I suggest that if you can't do that, it's transparent, and that's as much as you can expect from any radio system. There's nothing that's going to enhance it. Indeed, if I may, let me clarify certain things. Digital does not equate to high fidelity, better stereo, or lower distortion. You can make it do those things. I noticed, I think they're doing 60 dB of separation. Anybody that knows anything about stereo, you can't tell the difference between 20 and 60. I challenge anybody with the best broadcast ears, not alone the public. And the distortion isn't reduced by digital. Digital actually introduces artifacts that analog does not have. And digital is no better than any on any of these factors. And indeed, as you well know, many good ears can tell when something has been digitally recorded in comparison to the analog. And if you do what they're doing and have to do 70-to-1 frequency compression, it'll take any hearing should be able to hear that problem. It's the problem of squeezing in into the bandwidth. They've been asked to do an impossible job, and they've done as good as they can do using every trick in the book, and it just doesn't work any better.
The 70-to-1 that you're referencing, if they were to take the audio spectrum going into the encoder and, say, cut the bandwidth so you're only passing, say, 30 hertz to 10 kilohertz, would that give them any better results,
oh, yes.
Or does that...
The narrower you make the source material, the less you have to compress it. You know you have a certain limited bandwidth, and they can get like 7 or 8 kilohertz of effective bandwidth to do this digital. So you know what you're ending up with, what you start with. If you can start it with a lower amount, then it proportionally reduces. But you're a million miles away. Well, they did the best job they knew how. I'm not criticizing any of the work. I think it's a nice theoretical effort, but it's management. It's sales or driven, obviously. They've used the word digital, and they expect it to do things that it doesn't do. Digital has advantage, but it requires bandwidth, and it requires a constant signal, not one that has to handle perturbations, phase perturbations. The proof of the matter is, you look at all the literature, and they say they have to make the antenna flat, plus or minus 15 kilohertz, 30 kilohertz. Well, you can't get a spectrum to allow you to go phase flat 30 kilohertz. That is impossible day and night, but at night it's not even worth talking about.
To go ahead and use that 30 kilohertz of spectrum efficiently, you'd almost have to rechannel every AM radio station to maintain separation equal to that 30 kilohertz, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess it's the basic problem of how do you do this. I'm talking getting reasonable distances and going past power lines and various re-radiation problems. How do you get a flat spectrum. And they say when the spectrum gets a little bit unflat, that's why they adjust the phase so carefully, that you lose, it starts failing. And when it fails, the trick they use to keep it from completely failing, they step down from the digital, lower and lower fidelity, till they get to the core analog signal, which is a 5 kilohertz audio signal, monophonic. Monophonic. So it's very interesting. I worked on the stereo. I did design the basic design of some of the Sony radios, and one of the nice effects we worked out that I was so pleased with, and everybody was so pleased with, when you tune a stereo receiver in, the receiver would go to be in mono. You see, you were waiting for the pilot. The pilot would have to be detected, and it's a low frequency pilot. It takes a little time to detect. The pilot turns it on, and all of a sudden, this signal opens up, and it's gorgeous. You hear the sound just open up to you, the stereo. It's a great sound. But now, what do you do with the digital audio broadcasting system, where when you get into trouble, when you're driving along, this thing goes the other way, dumps from wideband stereo, 15 kilohertz, down to 5 kilohertz mono. And it has to do this because digital, the basic problem with digital in poor signal and noise situations, it fails completely. It's like when you have a digital cellular phone. You know, it goes completely dead. It doesn't go gracefully. It goes totally off. And that happens in this case with the higher order qualms they're dealing with. It happens like 15 dB you need, and if you give them like 2.5 dB for all this processing gain that takes the 8.5 seconds to process and all that, you end up with 12.5 dB. If you do to, they talk about 64 QAM because they need the bandwidth compression is the problem. Then you end up with 21 dB, which is 18.5 dB, and if you looked at that up on the calculated, the power ratio is 70.8 to 1. That's the power ratio. Whereas analog, you can listen into the noise. Actually, go to below zero, a little bit in there, and if the signal is clean, undistorted, you will hear into it.
And if I understand this correctly, when, let's say you're driving in a car and you pull up next to some noise source or just happen to be at the toll booth where usually there's some kind of noise introduced, you would hear on the analog side, you would be able to hear the station but with some noise, but the digital side would cut out, correct?
Yes, it gives up. It quits. And what it would do is just go into the 5 kilohertz backup. So it's not a rugged system. They claim it's rugged. It's not rugged whatsoever. Or why would they use the analog as the backup? You don't use the backup. Is more rugged than the original. So that's the story on that.
Well, it would seem to be proved that the signal is not rugged if you can hear, say, a station such as WOR here in Ohio in analog, but it's only good for 40, 50, 60 miles in digital.
Exactly. The term they've been using is robust. It's anything but robust, and I think it's highly confusing to the commission at this point because they've been told digital is more robust. Anything but. It's also not economical of bandwidth. People think that's a misnomer that we touched on, but it's just the opposite. And some people will tell you, well, now listen, we can compress the audio. We can slice it up and do all this manipulation. All right, you can indeed. But you can take that chopped up signal, frequency compressed, and you can put that through a single sideband channel as well. In other words, they're confusing digital processing with digital transmission. Anything you can do digitally with by frequency compression, you've got to be careful how you do it, as I just stated. It's very, very serious stuff if you do it wrong. But if you do it, and you're doing it for strictly frequency compression, you can take that frequency compressed signal and use single sideband, which is the ultimate in frequency economy. So the it's not bandwidth anywhere near as good as double sideband, and single sideband, as you know, is twice as good. Your baseband equals the total signal. So it's not effective. It's a waster of bandwidth.
Do you mind explaining just for a moment the relationship of AM, standard AM that we know, double sideband, and single sideband as it relates to the density of the recovered audio at the receiver?
The AM, as you know, you're limited to theoretically 100%. Of course, we abuse that, and you can abuse it and then suffer a little bit of distortion and so on. But you end up with your upper sideband and your lower sideband are equal, and for 100%, if you have a volt to carry, you end up with a volt of audio, because half a volt from the upper sideband, half a volt from the lower. Now, a double sideband suppressed carrier, you can get rid of the carrier, and by doing that, you can put all of your modulation into it, and therefore you can end up with 2 volts, assuming you've got the same peak envelope power limitation. Single sideband has that same situation. You can put all of your voltage in one sideband, and so you'd get 2 volts instead of one. Now, the advantage of single sideband over double sideband and over AM is not what most people think, including I worked heavily in this field way, way back at RCA. And I and everybody there also went that same routine. By the way, I should say that Bell Laboratories way back then were the originators of single sideband before my time, even in the 20s, and they did some very good work. But everybody I knew, theoretically, the advantage was just what I said, you get more audio. It's the most economic system for spectrum. But, you know, that turns out not to be the main advantage. And I think this is very interesting, especially to many of your members who listen to real fading signals. The advantage of single sideband is that it removes fading, almost completely removes the effects of fading. How does it do it? Well, fading, if you were to take a receiver and listen to a fading signal and simultaneously took a spectrum analyzer and watched it on the medium wave, you would see something very interesting. The fading that you see on a spectrum analyzer will roll through the frequency slowly. It goes at a fading rate, and you'll see it drifting back and forth. But what is amazing is, number one, it's broad. It's not highly selective. It isn't narrow band. It rolls through its broad band, and it's very shallow, meaning 6 to 8 dB. Well, a person who works with receivers Well, say 6 to 8 dB, when you have an AVC like you do in any receiver, there's not a receiver that's made without AVC, and that will take that 6 to 8 dB and bring it to like a tenth of a dB, because AVC is the feedback system that reduces it that substantially. And therefore, what's the problem? The sidebands are there, the carrier's there. It's, why do you hear fading? Well, you hear fading because, by the way, I wanted to, since I talked about the great AVC, that was an invention of Harold Wheeler of Hazeltine many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. Anyway, why do you hear fading? Well, you hear fading because of phase. A spectrum analyzer does not show you phase. You can't see any phase on a spectrum. It's not a dumb device, but it's a simple device. It's a filter rolling along back and forth. And that filter has no phase characteristic to it. You can't determine phase with the spectrum analyzer, the normal spectrum analyzer. I don't want to challenge anyone. But the point of it is, when the sidebands are in phase with the carrier in AM, double sideband, the sidebands, you get maximum modulation. The signal is undistorted and it sounds great. A little while later, the phase shifts. Those sidebands are out of phase. You cancel them out because they're 180 degrees out of phase and they're equal in amplitude, and you get a total fade. And that's what fading is. Now, single sideband, by eliminating one of the sidebands, it can't create a cancellation mode. It's physically impossible. You cannot cancel two forces unless they're equal. That's fading.
In some radios, such as the Sony ICF 2010, they use a synchronous detector, and you can either tune to the upper or the lower sideband. Is that why the synchronous detector is so much of a benefit to those of us who like to listen to distant AM?
Exactly. Exactly. And that is definitely the major advantage of single sideband. Spectrum is not to be sniffed at. I mean, I'm being a little glib there. Saving half the bandwidth is a noble cause, but we are not able at this point. That would require special receivers. And compatibility of broadcasting is essential, AM and FM. We cannot lose sight of compatibility, and I'm afraid that's what's been totally lost in all this these discussions. Compatibility is in the public interest. You cannot take those half a billion or more radios from the public and make them obsolete. It just can't happen, won't happen. It's legally unsupportable.
Touching back here on digital AM, if it is permitted at night, what impact do you think it'll have on the AM band and AM listenership as a whole?
Not a thing. It'll destroy itself instantly. I think that's one challenge I wouldn't accept if I were the people behind digital broadcasting. I would not attempt, because the coverage will be obscene, and the interference will just destroy them.
Do you think there's any danger to the Federal Communications Commission approving nighttime digital AM?
Not that it can't stick, because they can't ask the stations to commit suicide. I mean, it won't stand up. It certainly won't stand up against the legal challenge. And I am quite certain that the commission. There are many excellent engineers at the commission. They just aren't empowered to handle these things. They're overwhelmed with other work and so forth. But this digital buzzword, it just can't stand up against the cold facts. And nobody's going to stand and say, hey, well, you got to do something that just doesn't work.
Well, is there any expectation that the codec can be improved significantly, or has it really been kind of squeezed to death already?
It's been squeezed to death. It really is. I am very impressed, as I said before, with the effort that they've done. It's mighty impressive technology, but it just is beyond its capability. This compression is absolutely necessary because they're working with such a tiny band. I don't know how to say it. You can ask an engineer to jump 100 feet in the air, and he can try all he wants. It's not going. And by the way, I don't enjoy this because my life work has been new technology. I've been doing this forever. And I love new ideas, and I love them wherever they come from. It's always fun to see something that is good. I recently spent a lot of time on satellite systems, and it's very enjoyable. There's some excellent work done, including what I've just been talking about in coding, is awfully trellis codes and all these advanced turbo, all these things are wonderful work, but you can't apply it any more than they have. They've done their very, very best. 10 years of it.
You know, it seems to me from some of the writings that I've seen in some of the email lists and discussion groups that the people that are really kind of pro-digital AM are really content with that 40 to 50 mile range, and I'm speaking of a 50,000 watt radio station. I would assume that you'd have to work that same ratio backwards to a 1 kilowatt analog station. It'd probably wind up to be 3 to 5 miles then. But given the fact that they seemed content with their what I guess you'd call just the grade A coverage around a station, do you think digital broadcasting might be better suited for other frequencies, perhaps VHF or UHF?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure the engineers working on it would bless the management one, but the engineers would. The digital transmission, you give them a decent bandwidth to work with, and you give them a line-of-sight situation where the signal is really stable, and then they can do things. But don't ask them to go into the noise and handle a signal that you run into an AM, and in many cases into an FM. And for what reason? What is the payoff on all this? You can do AM stereo is absolutely doable over long distances. We had all the major stations, including WOR, when they had great engineers on. Jack Popley was one of the best engineers in broadcasting. He's no longer with us, of course, but he was chief engineer. We had WOR on AM stereo. We had it on WNBC. We had it on WABC. We had it on WQXR. And they covered huge distances day and night.
They were listenable in stereo here in Ohio.
Yes, sir. So what are we missing here? That's their main advantage, that they can give AM stereo. Their second main advantage is that they can send low-speed data. Well, we had KSL, by the way. Of course, they were on our AM stereo, too. KSL Bonneville, great engineer. Bill Lovelace, one of the best engineers, another man who's no longer with us, great man. We had it on digital slow-speed data, and they were trying to sign up stock market quotes. The system worked day and night with stereo as well as with mono. And so the two advantages that they keep talking about, why we should give up all the stations should spend, I think the quote is like $90,000 on equipment if you can flatten your antenna, broadband antenna.
Which may be a problem with directional AMs.
Which is definitely a problem with directional AM. To make it flat that wide is really, really tough and really, really expensive. Broadcasters, I don't see how they can conceivably handle this bill, but the real thing, the major advantage, I was speaking to a broadcaster just a half hour ago, the major advantage he has is not his license. It's, he has to have his license, maybe that's a misstatement, but is as important as his license is the fact that his listeners in their homes have 5-6 AM, FM radios that work, and that when they tune them in, as they do regularly, they get a good, useful signal. Now, all those radios are going to become obsolete? I don't think so. That is insane. So the broadcaster, and they want to start this all over, meaning that if you took all the radios away from the public, why wouldn't they go to satellite? Why wouldn't they go to cable? Why wouldn't they go to web? Do you want to contest that? These radios that they're going to have to buy are going to be expensive. It's not in the public interest. It's not in the broadcaster's interest.
Jumping back to the thing that I posed about going on to other frequencies with digital broadcasting, you've worked with some of the receiver people in the past. How hard, let's just suppose, for example, that they could take these digital AM stations and, say, pack them up into some frequencies that are being vacated by analog television stations. So we're talking the VHF and the UHF spectrum. How hard would it be to come out with a new generation of radio, which would be AM, FM, and then these digital radios that would receive VHF and UHF?
Well, it wouldn't be too hard, I believe, the conversion, but you'd have to sell to the set manufacturers, and it's a hard sell, that this had a good chance of causing people to come into the showroom and buy that package. They make an awful lot of money on these special packages, so I would say with a good sales effort, and with the money that the supporters of digital AM and FM have expended, they probably could do it. I wouldn't doubt that. They could promote it well enough and do the doable rather than attempting to do the undoable.
It'd be a similar sales pitch like what XM and Sirius is trying to do now.
Right, exactly. And they just, you sell the sizzle or the digital. They sold the digital. The public is so confused with the word digital. It has all these great concepts, but it isn't so. And that's problem. It's not supportable from an engineering standpoint, but certainly with a broadband signal and a line of sight, they would have a very viable product. This is not expensive. You know, integrated circuits, the complexity is gone. The question of complexity used to be, when I was a young guy, you'd say, oh, wait a second, that is going to take too much circuitry. But as you know, an integrated circuit is just a matter of redrawing them. You've got plenty of room on ICs to do these extra functions. It's a piece of cake. So that part of it is nothing. It's the marketing that they'd face. And they would have to face AM and FM stations as to keeping the audience, because the audience will still want to use their existing sets. They're not going to go racing out to buy new sets. Nobody will be putting a gun to their head to do it anyway.
I sense from our membership that a lot of people are frustrated about digital AM. If somebody would like to voice their opinion to someone that they perceive is going to listen and have an impact on making decisions about digital AM, who would you suggest they write to or contact?
Well, I suggest they write to you and to me. I really think I read your submission to the commission. I think it's excellent, and it's certainly extremely factual and reliable. So I think they should write to Fred Volpe. And I also would like them to write or call me, and I would be willing to send them a copy of our submission to the commission. And let me just state what is a little different in what my proposal is. Mine came in later, and what I want to do is I want to have the commission review its entire rulemaking procedures. I think that this digital broadcasting on AM and FM is the result of a flawed procedure. And by that, I mean the proceedings where we have groups of excellent engineers work on committees, industry committees, and industry associations who are then advised the commission. The commission doesn't have the funds to evaluate all these new proposals, especially complicated ones. So they have to rely on advisory groups. So I would love to get support on this. And if anybody would like to see, it's a 10-page document. All they have to do is call or write me. It's I'm Leonard R. Kahn, K-A-H-N, care of Kahn Communications, Inc., 501 Fifth Avenue, Suite 2002, New York, New York, 10017. And you can call me at 212-983-6765.
And it probably would be a good idea to also write your congressman or congresswoman and let them know how you feel about these issues in radio. Leonard Kahn talking with us about digital audio broadcasting, amongst other things, here on All Radio Volume 1. Leonard, I'd like to thank you for your time in putting together this edition and your wisdom and information that you've had to share with our members. Leonard will be back with us on a future edition of All Radio, and he'll be talking with us about his invention called PowerSide, and also he'll be with us talking about the quality of AM radio. And we hope you'll join us for that particular issue. Speaking of issues, I would like to thank those of you who have waited so very patiently while we put together this edition, actually resurrect it from the dead. And I would also like to thank again Kelly Prescott, Unix Guru, and Linux Guru for his help in resurrecting dead hard drives where a lot of this material resided. Again, thank you very much, Kelly and membership, for your patience in this accident that we had at the end of the year. That's it with All Radio. We'll see you on the next edition of All Radio with hopefully some more topics. Don't forget to let us know what you like, what you dislike, any suggestions, contributions, whatever. Send them to us here at the DX Audio Service. And the address is simply 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. And on the internet, we're at www.nrcdxas.org. I'm Fred Volpe saying 73, good DX, and get out and support radio.